This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by David Guida, a cloud developer, and he's joining me from Montreal. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening, David.
Hi, Brian. Thank you very much for inviting me.
To start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, sure. So I'm living in Montreal. I arrived 1 year ago, just in time for the pandemic. I am a cloud developer for a company named Ecosoft. We focus mostly on the insurance company. And primarily on Azure, but we tend to be cloud agnostic as much as possible. I'm part of a team of architects. We are looking for a new architect, actually. So in case anybody knows anybody, let me know. And yeah, that's it.
What do you do for them in the architecture role?
Well, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Mainly, I work on PLCs. So I got the requirements. I wrote a bunch of PLCs. And then when I find something interesting that can be evolved into a minimum viable product, I work on it until I can get it to a semi-production state. Then I hand it over to the product team. And I work with them till the product is on production. And then I move on to the next project and so on and so forth.
Tonight, we're going to primarily talk about event sourcing because you've been writing about that on your blog. But to kind of get started, give us an overview of what event sourcing means.
Yeah, so event sourcing is an amazing architectural pattern. I love it. It's probably one of my favorite architectural patterns. And it's, my opinion, it's one of the hardest to get it right. You can screw up very easily and very quickly, but once you get it right, it's amazing to use. So it's, as I said, one of the most complex patterns, caching, validation, and name things. So ideally, what it means is that everything around us is a stream of events. Everything that happens around us is a stream of events. There's something that happens. There are I'm pushing the button to call the elevator and getting down and opening the door. All of these things are events. So at the heart of event sorting is the fact that we store those events unless they happen. And since they have happened, they cannot be changed. So what we have is a continuous stream or append only log of events that cannot be, of course, mutated anymore. Now, the idea is that for every aggregate in our system, because event sourcing is deeply, deeply tied with the philosophy of domain-driven design. Every aggregate will have its own, let's say, stream of events. So every time something happens on an aggregate, we store an event, and that's it. Then, at some point in time, we may want to read and perform some queries on the aggregate. So what we do, we fetch all of the events for a specific aggregate, and we do something that is called rehydration on those events. So we build up back the state of that and do whatever we have to do. Of course, there are several strategies, because if we do it like that, the system will be extremely, extremely slow. So there's a bunch of techniques and algorithms that we can put up in place to make things a little bit easier. So for example, another thing is that event sourcing should be applied with CQRS, Command Query Responsibility Segregation, in the sense that the command side is the part of your system that takes care of writing the events, or in any case, performing the write operations, the creation, update, delete, whatever you want to call them, on your aggregates, and then persists the events. Then you can have something that sits in the middle that listens to those events being written to your database and extract them, rehydrates the aggregates, and does some modifications and writes query models on possibly a separate backend storage, because they might have a different way of being persisted for performance reason. At this point, we can use the query side of the CQRS to fetch the data when we have to perform the queries. That makes a little bit faster everything. That's more or less the gist of it. I don't know if I can make it easier. Probably not. But yeah, probably with a practical example would be much easier. So I don't know,
Well,
like
yeah,
a
let's
bank.
talk about, who's using it and what would be a good use case for this.
Sure. So in my idea, a banking system will be perfect with event sourcing. Think about all the transactions that can occur when there is a financial transaction, when there is money flowing from one bank account to another. That is something set in stone, okay, cannot change. Of course, you will make another transaction, but you're not rolling back the previous one. Once it's happened, it's happened. So you write it. That's it. That is an event. I am transferring money from my account to your account. That is something that is written into stone. So I can have in our system, we will have one aggregate, which is the user, the customer, whatever. And this aggregate has a list of bank accounts. Now I can transfer money, so I can have like a method on one of the bank accounts that says, okay, let's transfer this amount of money in this currency to Brian's account. The system performs whatever validation he has to do, if any, depends on the quality of our bank system. And then it will pack up this event in a very small, nice message, and we store it somewhere. Then at some point in time, as I said, we will have a system that listens to those events being persisted. How we can do it is by, for example, sending another event, which is in this case it will be called like an integration event. Why it's integration event? It's an integration event because we are integrating between two separate systems. One that takes care of the commands, and another one, which is our subscriber, for example, in this case. Now, the subscriber will listen to the fact that there was a money transaction, extract the necessary data from the payload of this message, and rebuild a query model that, in this case, will represent the state of Brian's account with the new amount at this point. So, if you had, let's say, $500, and I gave you other $500, now you have 1,000. That's it. Now your account will show up 1,000. That's more or less the gist of it. Yes.
Can you have multiple subscribers to those events?
Yes, of course. Of course. For example, we can have another subscriber that takes care of the notifications. So, for example, I don't know, this one will just send you I don't know, a text message, an email, whatever, a FedEx representative to your door saying, "Hey, you got $500. Congrats." Or, I don't know, another one that listens to the amount of money that got transferred. So, for example, if there are multiple transactions in a very short amount of time, or big transactions, maybe you want to send that information to a third party authority system that says that, "Oh, this looks a little bit suspicious. Maybe we should do something about this. There's too much money flowing here."
Let's stick with this one for a sec. Let's say the bank account. Let's say there are thousands and thousands of transactions on the bank account. But all I'm really interested in is the balance. Do I need to run through all of those to calculate, oh, there's $2 in my account? Or is there a different way of saying, okay, if thousands have occurred, I'm going to store the current balance as a single number somewhere else as well?
Yeah, that will be your query model.
So don't you, okay, the query model, but the query model must be looking at some storage mechanism. So do you have a
Yeah.
traditional database at that point?
No, at this point, for the query model, personally, I prefer using document databases.
Sure, but yeah,
There
but a
will
database
be.
as opposed to a then the event, so it's some kind
Yeah,
of a
yeah, yeah. No,
table.
no, 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 no.
Sorry,
The
I didn't
event.
necessarily mean a SQL database, but a database where you have a number and that's the representation.
Yes, exactly. So let's stop here for a second. Query models will be stored in a completely different system, probably from the events. We are not building our query models directly from the events. We are reconstructing the query models from the events. Yes, when an event occurs, or maybe when X number of events have occurred, but we are not doing that every time. So the query models can be thought as a snapshot at this time exactly of all the events that have occurred. And moreover, the query models can be we can have multiple query models per aggregate based on what are the requirements of our application. I can have a query model for the archive of customers. I can have a query model for the detail page. I can have a different query model when I'm sending notifications and so on and so forth. But all of them will be built by a separate subscriber to the events that occurred. But again, the events will be stored in another system. Now that's the heart of the event sourcing.
What if I say to you, you know what? I like my database and I can store those thousands of transactions in one table and I can store the current balance in another table. Why is
Yeah.
event sourcing better?
No, you can do that. You can totally do that. But think about stuff like disk fragmentation, and you will be writing a lot and probably reading less than what you're writing. So maybe splitting and having two distinct databases will be nicer for your hard drives, probably. I mean, from a performance standpoint, it's always better to separate the two storage, the query one and the common one.
What about another scenario? You'll often find a company needs to make a historical adjustment to some transaction. You know, you transferred $500. Whoops, that was incorrect. It should have been 501. That's relatively easy to correct with a database. What do you do in an event stream that's already happened?
No, you don't.
Okay.
You don't. You should not do that.
But
If you, if,
how do you make that adjustment that is necessary from a business perspective?
well, if it's a business perspective, you do another transaction of just 1 cent and you add it to the system. That will be the most, let's say, nice and legal way of doing that. It's a different. If you made a mistake, well, it's a human and user mistake. It's not something that should be really addressed by the system. So what you do is you just append a new transaction with the difference in amount of money.
But then that transaction, sorry, that new event that occurs later, very significantly later in the stream than where it should have occurred, could that be a problem?
Well, at this point, it depends on your business rules,
Yeah.
I guess. It's a compromise, I suppose. In any case, yes, I say that it will be the most legal thing to do, but those things are not written into stone. So again, we have to find the right equilibrium. As for every pattern existing, it's not like, okay, the Gang of Four or whatever book this enterprise patterns and architecture says that we have to implement this thing this way. No, that's a lie. That's the bibliography. This is how the book says, or the author says that the pattern is, but my scenario might be different. So, okay, I can take an idea from the book, but I will evolve it and steer it and maybe go in a different way. And maybe at the end, I will have a different pattern.
One of the things I found quite interesting when I was reading about event sourcing was the idea that if you've kept, let's say it again, the transactions as an event stream, is that the correct word?
I guess, yeah.
And let's say I've got two applications that are consuming those right now, that's great. But I've got, you know, let's say in 5 years' time, I add a third application. I can
By
have that app.
consuming, you mean read?
Yes, excuse me, reading. So I can have that third application 5 years later, look at the history, 20, 30 years of events, run through them, and come to the answer that it needs to come to. Whereas if I'm using a traditional database, I'm to store kind of the, let's say, the what you're referring to as a query model, the outcome, I won't have that full history of events to run through. And that seemed like a very nice feature.
It is. One thing to note, though, is that there is one thing that sits in the middle that are called snapshots. Snapshots are the representation of an aggregate at a specific point, and it's a photograph of an aggregate from the perspective of the command part. In the sense that it's different from the query model. How can I explain that? You say that we have years of events on a specific aggregate. So if we want to rehydrate that aggregate and perform another monitoring transaction, for example, it will take a long time because we have to read all the events, we have to replay them in order to get to the final state of the aggregate, and then we can do whatever we have to do on that. So what we can do is we have our nice let's say we table with all the events. Then on a regular basis or after tot events, X events, we replay them, we rehydrate the aggregate, and we save it as it is. That is a snapshot. So the next time that we have to rebuild the aggregate, we start from the snapshot and we replay only the event that happened after it. This will speed up the entire system. Now, when it comes to the query model, the system does not change. Okay, the whatever is the subscriber responsible of rebuilding the query model, it will always fetch the latest form of the aggregate, whether it be from multiple snapshots or whatever, and then create whatever form of the query model needs it to be.
Outside of, let's say, this banking scenario, which is very heavily based around transactions and history that's important, what other, let's say, common business scenarios might event sourcing be suitable for that are currently being done with traditional databases?
Well, anything that has to do with huge amount of historical data. Okay, so I could think of
Maybe weather, something like that.
for yes, I was exactly thinking about something about that, or maybe transports like trains, airlines, things like that. You know, keeping track of who went where, how. Shipping, all the workflow for a package that has to be shipped. So I'm shipping this package, and I hand it over at the shop, and then the shop takes it and puts it on a, I don't know, on a cart, and then the cart goes to the docks and on a boat and whatever, and it gets shipped from Canada back to EU. And so on and so forth. All of these small events can be tracked down at the end in an event store.
If I want to use event sourcing, what technologies am I going to go out and look for?
Yeah, there's a few options here and there. So, for example, there is a nice tool called Event Store, which is an event sourcing database. It's a piece of technology that has been designed specifically for event sourcing. It can be very easily installed via Docker, so everybody can play with it, and it's fairly easy to use. There's plenty of libraries, client libraries to operate it. I've used the C Sharp ones, so it's very easy. After that, we can use, for example, there is another one called Marten, which is a library that sits on top Postgres. So we can use Postgres as a document DB, and Marten sits on top of that and helps using it. I heard there are a considerable amount of people that is using Kafka as well for event sourcing. These days I'm using Cosmos DB on Azure instead, which is pretty nice, honestly.
Yeah, let's move into the Azure side because I think you've quite a lot of experience on using Azure to support event sourcing.
As I said, I'm using Event Store. I'm sorry, I'm using Cosmos as my backend storage for the events. So the idea is that all in all, an event is we can consider as a medium size, actually no, it's not that big, a small size message, JSON message. Okay, so what at the heart, all we need is a storage that allows us to store a JSON object in a column, okay, and a timestamp, of course, and possibly a version. We can try to use the timestamp as a version. Why do we need a version? We need it because let's think about concurrency. We don't want two instances of our writing system to write at events at the same time for the same aggregate. Okay. So we need to keep track, and possibly this is something that you let your persistent mechanism to handle for you. So there has to be some way to detect who arrived the first and give you back a version of the aggregate after you have persisted your events.
Mentioning, sorry, versioning, that's an interesting because the idea popped in my head. Over time, the shape of your events that you're putting into your event store might change.
Yeah,
How do you
that's
handle
tricky.
that?
That's tricky. That
I mean, that would be
is one of
expected though, if you're talking about years of
Yes.
events. There's almost no
Yes.
doubt that it's going to change.
Yes. So let's say that, for example, we start our banking system and we start persisting the details of our customers. And initially, since we're a very small bank, we store first name and last name in a single field, which is nice. Saves some headaches, but might give you other headaches. So what we do at some point in time, we find out that when somebody from the marketing system, from the marketing department says, okay, when we send emails to our customers, we want to address them only by first name because it's, I don't know, it feels easier. We cannot do that because we have all of our customers with first name and last name in a single field. So what we do, and at this point, we need to create a version two of our customers. So the only way, well, one of the way, I'm sorry, one of the ways to do that is make sure that not only the aggregate per se have a version, which is more or less the version of the last event persisted, but also the classes that we're using to define our events have a version. So let's say that we have an event named create customer that will have a version one. Then we will have a create customer version two with first name and last name split into two separate fields. All in all, this will be stored as a JSON object, so it's not a big deal from the database perspective. But then when we rehydrate the aggregate, we know that the event that we stored was called create customer version two or update customer, for example, in this case, because the customer was already there. So we know that that was the version two of the event, or in any case, it's a different event because create customer V1 and V2, they're two completely different classes. So we treat them as a two distinct instance of two distinct objects because that's exactly what they are. It's tricky. Yes, it's tricky. And ideally, you don't evolve a system into event store. You start with that. So you when you start and you approach the creation of a new application or a new microservice, whatever, you begin directly with event sourcing. It's not like, okay, we're using CRUD and tomorrow we will be using event sources. No, that's not going to happen.
If I'm going with something like Azure or Cosmos DB, am I writing 100% of my .NET application from the perspective of event sourcing, or are there libraries out there that will help me, like an entity framework library that allows me to perform persistence and do nice querying? Are there event sourcing libraries that I can point to an event store and it will, I don't know, return the information to me in some sort of event stream?
Well, I my experience, I'm using the official Microsoft libraries on top of Cosmos. They're pretty flexible and they give me the right degree of autonomy that I need. So for now, at least for me, I prefer to stick with the basic library, which are more low level. I'm not using anything specific on top of that personally, but I'm sure there will be some tools. There is something called, just give me a second, let me refresh my memory, mass transit, that if I'm not mistaken,
Yeah, I've used Mass
might use.
Transit as a kind of an
Did
event
you?
bus on top of RabbitMQ or other systems.
Yeah.
Is that now have the capability of working with event sourcing?
Not directly, but I haven't used it yet. I will be. So it's something that can sit on top of it and can help a bit. But as I said, personally, the Microsoft official libraries are quite good for that. So once you have a clear understanding of what you're doing, I mean, it's not like you start event sourcing when you're a complete beginner. You need a fair good amount of experience to start a project with that.
Where do you see the future of event sourcing going?
Yeah, as I said, there are few tools online that are making the life of developer a little bit easier. So as I said at the very beginning, it's a difficult pattern. It's not for everybody, and it's not for every domain, of course. So as you did, Dahan, said multiple times, do not even source everything, all the things. No, don't do that. So in the future there will be more tools to make life easier, but they have to be considered as they are tools. So as I really love to say, there is a tool for everything. Okay, you just have to know which one it is and apply it. But that's it. But you cannot, you know how people used to say, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Okay, and yeah, event sourcing is just another tool in your belt that you have. That it's nice to have. Okay, it's nice to have.
I know you said event sourcing is not for beginners, but for someone who wants to get started, where would they go?
Well, I have a fairly good amount of blog posts on my personal websites, but there's plenty of documentation online. If you there's a huge amount of very nice talks on YouTube, from the, for example, there's a bunch from the DDD convention, even from the last year, that can be found. So they give a very nice introduction on the topic. So there's plenty of documentation online.
What's the address of your blog?
It's my first name, last name, so davideguida.com. That's the Italian version.
I'll put a link into the show notes. Aside from the website, how would people find you?
I'm on Twitter, so I'm on Stack Overflow. I'm on LinkedIn. I use a lot LinkedIn and Twitter. I also have a personal page on Facebook, but I don't really use that much. So I prefer LinkedIn and Twitter.
Sure. What's the Twitter handle?
Same as the blog with an 82 at the end.
Okay. Any final notes before we wrap up for the evening?
Keep studying, because knowledge is power. That's everything I had to say. I mean, don't stop. Don't ever stop. Event sourcing is one of the most interesting patterns that I've found, but there's plenty more, even more interesting. This is just the tip of the iceberg. If you think that that is hard, there will be harder things.
David Gita, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much again. Cheers.
If you like this episode, you might also like episode 132, where I talked with Lars Klint about a cloud-first approach to development, episode 51 with Rachel Reese, where she talked about JET and how they used event sourcing, or episode 38 with Mark Eisenberg, where he talked about private clouds. The opening music was a return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was A Storm at Eileen Moore by John Luke Hefferman from the album Eileen Moore.